Morning and greetings in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. Count it a privilege to be here again with you. I was surprised and shocked to see my friend Sylvan and his wife Esther here today. I knew they were in the area visiting, but didn't know they'd be here at church this morning. And I don't know if I said it last night, but if you go far enough from home, you can teach about child training because nobody knows your family. But now Sylvan knows me, so to bear with that. And Sylvan doesn't know that I talked about him last night. Remember 22 years ago, Sylvan, we were with this fellowship and not here at this place, but that was an enjoyable time. Enjoyed the opening by Joshua and also Matt or Matthew, I'm not sure. I'm learning names, so if you'll have to bear with me if I don't say it quite right. And he challenged us on energy, and there's nothing better than youth that have energy. You got to carry the torch. Us older ones are getting old and tired, so thank you for that. And Joshua, you seem to have plenty of energy too, and we're glad for that. If I can find my notes here, we can... child training is what we're going to talk about this morning, but just a few comments before we get there. When I come into a church with stained glass windows, which is not really your choosing, maybe, I remember what a brother shared with me years ago, some time back, that you can enter into a church with stained glass windows, it's kind of dark, and everything is solemn, and you feel like you've worshipped. But you really haven't. And this is our Sunday, the lesson here. God is a spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. True worship is praise to our God for his truth and living that truth. And I think about the stained glass windows. They're nice, but there's nothing compared to the beauty of the foliage and stuff. And as we were coming up here, I thought about people who plant their flower gardens in a beautiful way, arranging the different colors together. You know, God just, boom, he put the red, the orange, and the yellow all in there and mixed them up. God did that, because I don't think anybody planted those particular trees. I'm still trying to figure out, different trees are just red, different trees are yellow and orange, or is that just different ways the phloem and the xylem or whatever all that is goes. I'm not sure, but anyhow, it's beautiful. And God designed that. And we sang that song, "O Lord my God," and that's our creator, that's our God, and we can trust him. He is, when we see that, we can trust him. Just a few comments yet about the Northern Kingdom and the Southern Kingdom. It's a wonderful study. Just two lessons to learn from that. The Northern Kingdom changed the laws of God. Don't change the law of God. The law of God is fixed. It's eternal. Understand what God means by those laws. Don't try to reduce them down. Romans 1, they reduced them down. And the second one is when they had reduced the law of God, when they went into captivity to the Assyrians, they intermarried with the heathen. Don't intermarry with the heathen. The Southern Kingdom, they didn't keep the law of God, but they said, this is the law of God, and they refused to intermarry, and God's remnant came out of that. So just two lessons from that. Child training. There was a man that wrote a book, and he was a young man, and he was married, maybe he had small children. This is the book that he wrote, 10 Surefire Ways to Raise Spiritual Giants, okay? 10 years later, the book was out of print, so he rewrote it, and this was the title he gave this one, 10 Principles of Child Training. And so then 10 years later, I think it was out of print again, and all his children were married and gone, and he rewrote it again. He gave it this title, A Few Child Training Suggestions You Might Find Helpful. So this morning I'm going to give you a few child trainings that you might find helpful. And we shared that last night, how that sometimes you, as you look back on your failures, you're not sure about what you did. But we're thankful for the Lord's goodness. And I'd like to read from Ephesians 6, verses 1 to 4. Familiar passage there. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, that thou mayest live long on the earth. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. And that's what we want to do, is bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. And as we talk about child training, and I might talk, if your child acts up and throws a fit, just relax. I know all about children, and it won't happen all in one time. So we want to look at that, some principles and some ideals. And I know as a young person, I had a lot of ideals and visions, and I guess that's where the surefire ways to raise spiritual giants was. And one of the things that that I need to acknowledge in my, seems like generation follows generation, and as we look back on the previous generation, it seemed like the children had pulled the wool over their eyes, and their children were doing things, and we just saw so many failures in the previous generation. It seemed like our generation, we were fired up to raise children for the Lord, you know, and we come off in a little bit overly zealous, you know. And I think some of our firstborns caught the brunt of it pretty hard. So if you're a firstborn, maybe mom and dad were practicing on you, and you need to understand that a little bit. But we had to back off a little bit on our overzealousness. And when I share this morning, it is, as I think about that, you don't want to be overly harsh, and you don't want to be lenient. So where does that put us? We need to find the proper approach to it. And so it's a little bit difficult sometimes to share as to where it should all be. But we'll try to give some ideals, visions, and practical illustrations of what I've learned and what I've gone through. Training means to narrow your children. It makes me think of the man that I did a job for. And that man was 63 years old. It was some time back. He was slightly older than me. But he said, he is studying all the religion, all the religions in the world, Eastern religions, all the different religions, and he wants to discover which religion is right. You know, he wants to, I guess, experiment with them all. And he said, I'm confused. He said, I don't know which one's right. And I told him, I said, well, I don't know how I said, but you need just to commit your life to the Lord Jesus Christ. You know what he told me? That would narrow me down. But that's what you need. You need to narrow it down. And I stake my claim on the Lord Jesus Christ. I'm going to live for him. My testimony is it's been beautiful. Commit your life to the Lord Jesus Christ and experience the abundant life, the joy of the Lord. Okay, some of the phrases that we've heard preached, and I've embraced, I haven't always done this, but the one that I heard was that if you want to learn child training, Proverbs has 31 chapters. Read one chapter a day, and there's just a lot of help in there on child training. First chapter, and you should have a good grasp of the Proverbs anyhow. Some of those first chapters, chapter one, you know, don't make friends with bad company. You know, some of chapter three is a powerful one. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. And you read some of those in chapters 5 through 7, moral purity. And Solomon is saying, my son, listen to this. Do you realize what's going to happen if you turn from the Lord? Heed this advice. And as I shared last night, we are giving them what they need. And again, as I think about the lesson, I try to give you an overview as to what we're aiming for, and I want to insert that enough that you get a hold of it, is that you have so many years to convince them that this is true. And if they can experience and say, yes, that is true, and I want to embrace that. And like with chapter 7 and some of them where he says, listen, if you go after your flesh and you go after that strange woman, you're going to be like an ox going to the slaughter, and you don't know what's happening to you. When an ox goes, when you're trying, they don't like to be loaded on the trailer to go to the slaughter, but they have no idea where they're going. They're going to their death. And if we could convince our children, if you go after your flesh, you go after the world, you're going to destruction. You don't want that. And that somehow we must show them the truth of that matter and know that Satan is a liar. He's out to destroy. He's out to kill and to steal. I don't have it quite right, but he's a liar, and it's not true. And we have to be able to convince them that that's not right. Some of the other phrases that we heard, cry with them when they're young, or you can cry with them when they're old. And you'd rather cry with them when they're young. And I'll talk about that a little later. Don't spare for their crying. And the one you will get across to them, what is important to you? What is important to you? You will be able to get across to them. You will train them as to when you are serious. And this is one of my ideals that I had that didn't pan out. I'm going to tell my child one time, and then after that, I'll give him correction because he didn't listen. Okay, so this is one of those. How many your parents ever do that? Do you do that? No, you say, don't do that. And they don't listen. Now, don't do that. And you keep fussing them. Don't do that. I remember Howard Hendricks, he gave that illustration. It was so real. Maybe you've heard it before about the two boys playing in the sandbox. And the mother steps out and she says, Johnny, I don't know, Johnny is always the phrase. If any Johnny's here, we have a Johnny at our church. When I say that, he perks up. But Johnny says, come, it's supper time. And the boy keeps on playing. And his friend looks at him. He acts like he didn't even hear it. And she comes out, Johnny, supper time, and keeps on playing, like as if didn't hear a thing. And after a while, she's screaming, Johnny, it's supper time. And he looks at his friend, he says, well, I better go now, he said. And she has trained him that I don't have to listen until I start screaming. You don't want a child to be trained that way. You want a child to understand what I said, I mean it, and I mean it right now. And I haven't always held up to that ideal. Sometimes you don't want to correct, and you keep on nagging, and sometimes you feel like you're going to be correcting all the time. One of the ideals there. Parents need to be together on their child training. You need to work together at it. A child will learn whether mom's leaning or dad's leaning, and that's where they'll go to, can I go here? And sometimes they'll come to me and I'll say, what did mom say about that, you know? And we need to work together on that as best as we can. And if a mother knows that the dad does not want something and she permits it, you're a disaster. I'm sorry, it won't work. You cannot undermine the authority in the home. One of the things that I've heard and learned is very important, that children have a will like steel, but they have emotions that are very fragile. You must break that will of steel, but you must not destroy their fragile emotions. That's where correction with a paddle is superior to all the nagging and the fussing and the fuming that goes on. It destroys your emotions and the screaming at the child. And I want to get to that later, so I won't. But that's one of the ideals that I, in my head, I know that it, I understand that. Last night I tried to give you three simple things to follow. That of when you what you know, you put it into practice. It's just a matter of doing. And it's not so much that we don't know. And I've in Christianity, in a broad way, we are a people that have the scriptures, we have a people that have been taught, and we know, but we don't obey. Obedience brings understanding, and so as parents, do what you know. The second one was humility, just a poor in spirit, humility. And the third one was a love for Christ. I'd like to give you two ideals to follow in training children. First one is love your children, love your child. And as I study this more and more, it comes through to me in a very strong way that when there is a heart of love for my children, it's extremely important. And one man told me this. He said, when my child knows that I love him, I can correct him as hard as I like. And I believe that. And this man, if you knew this man, he was a big man. And he had a son that was seemed frail and weak. And I know when he was there, I pitied that little fellow because he did. He dealt hard with him. But that's what he said, and I believe that he's right. If they know that you love them, you can correct them in a good way. The second one is command your children. Now that word seems a little bit hard, and especially in our world, because we don't like that terminology necessarily. God told Abraham, I know that he will command his children after him. And I'm going to talk about that a little later here. But there was a man that he did not come from a Christian background, a plain Christian background. He was a minister, and this is what he said. I didn't have a Christian father, but when my father said yes, he meant yes, and when he said no, he meant no. Clarity in the whole thing, and that's very important as fathers to our children. One of the philosophies of our time in our society is that, well, they would say no spankings, no correction with the rod. I don't know what term you like, and I don't know where you're at on that, but I believe the scripture says use the rod. There's no scripture verse that says spare the rod and spoil the child. That's not true. But it implies using the rod on a child. And the philosophy of our time is that if you command them, you say, this is what you need to do, you spoil their ability to blossom into this beautiful person. And that philosophy is not true. There are parents trying to have a relationship with 3 and 4 year olds. At this age, you're not developing that. The kind of relationship you want is that I am dad, and what I say, you will do. That gives a child security, sense of love, and cared for. And I'm going to show you that on the chart over here. After a while, I'm going to draw that. And as I met some of you, I realized how many of you were down there at the men's thing, and so I'm a little embarrassed if I have to repeat myself, but anyway, well, here we go. So, all right, love your children and command them. Love your children again. I'd like to read some verses from Psalm 127, verses 1 to 5. Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh but in vain. It is vain for you to rise up early, to sit up late, to eat the bread of sorrows, for so he giveth his beloved sleep. Lo, children are an heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. As arrows are in the hand of a mighty man, so are the children of the youth. So are children of the youth. Happy is the man that hath his quiver for them. They shall not be ashamed, but they shall speak with the enemies in the gate. Claim that promise. Happy is the man that has his quiver full. Happy is the man that sees children as a blessing from the Lord. And I shared that last night, and one brother said that he appreciated that when our values, our goals are wrong and we can't reach them, it produces anger. But if our goals and values are wrong, we will not love our children. We will not appreciate them. If you're chasing the American dream, do I have to explain the American dream? Okay, this fancy house, a nice car, it's a wonderful job, plenty of money. That's the American dream. If you're chasing that, children will hinder that. They will get in the way. Children cost money. Children just take away from that whole thing, and they're just not going to help you get there. And if you look at your child in that way, that he's a hindrance to me, he's taking my time and my energy and my money, and they don't really, and their child feels that, they're not going to feel love. There will be a sense in them that you just tolerate them. As I think about this, I'm not sure where to take all this, but there are things called accidents. You didn't really want this child, and that comes through. And I don't know how all that comes through and where all to take all that, but you need to see that as gifts from the Lord, as a beautiful addition to your home, to your life, and you see them as a potential for God's kingdom in a beautiful way. I used to look at my neighbors. Everything was orderly. And I'm not saying you shouldn't be orderly, okay? But everything was orderly. There wasn't a thing out of place. They had one child. And I mean, they would drive in, and they would get the mail out of the mailbox, and the garage door would go up, and they'd pull in the garage, and the garage door went down. So you're getting the impression that I was the opposite of that. Yeah, ours things were a little bit chaotic around there. Our garage is, the door hardly works because we have to, anyway, and it's full of stuff, so we don't park in the garage, and that's our house. And I looked at that, and I thought, I wonder what that would be like to be everything TT. You know, when I look back on that, how boring. How boring. I mean, children are, you know, are life. That's fun. That's excitement. We don't see, our normal person does not see proper values in life. We must say, God, you take over the values that I need, and you give me what's good for me, not what I feel like I should have or what I want, okay? Through the difficulty and the pressure, and again, I give you encouragement, there are blessings from the Lord. It'll build your character to go through all those struggles with keeping everything in line. And children, if you love your children, okay, children will always embarrass you. I said this here, and if one of your children throw a fit, if you don't love that child like you should, and your pride is all once hurt because everybody's looking at you, you're going to be a bit severe on that child. If you love your child, you will correct that child because he needs correction, not because the child embarrassed you. You got a hold of that? You love the child, you give the child correction. And when I talk about loving your children, I'm not saying, oh, these sweet little things, you let them get away with whatever. No, if you love your child, you will correct your child. But if you're embarrassed by, if they're embarrassing you, and then you will be severe than you should be. And sometimes children will do things, and this has to do maybe with motivation, but we had a son that, I looked at our van, I thought, what are these H's on my van? Little scratch marks. My son learned how to make H's. I don't know how old he was, but I think he knew better. But anyhow, he had a stick and he was drawing H's on my van. No, That didn't go well with me, but I, you know, he needed correction. But I had to understand that he was a child. That's what I'm saying sometimes, that do you love your child or do you love your vehicle? Thankfully, it wasn't a fancy new vehicle that was worth a whole lot of money. Enjoy your children. Again, love your child. The goal, again, is that they would internalize our values, our goals, and our ideas. Command your children, and they will give you rest. Correct them, and they will give you rest. And I'm going to draw this. Can I just jump across here? This has been the, probably, it's from Fugate's book on what the Bible teaches about child training. And when I reflect on this and think about this, this has been the thing that has, since in my mind, has been the most valuable thing that we got a hold of in training children. I don't know if I say it the most valuable thing, but the thing that I understood and what I see in parents in a real way. Okay, so this is a child at 0 years old. Here is 10 years old, and here's 20 years old. We'll say that that's your children at your home. This is the age here. And this is the, from, what should we say, 1 to 10 on a scale of control. And this is what he said about it, that too many parents will look at a little child and say, and let them have what they want. I remember at a place doing an appliance job, and this child got up, and she might have been, I don't know, 7, 8 years old. I forget how old it was. Didn't matter. And the mother said, "What would you like for breakfast?" And she was in a grumpy mood anyhow. And I forget what else. Do you want a bowl of cereal? No. Do you want peaches? No. I mean, it was just a whole list. And I thought, if you don't soon tell that child what it wants, I'm going to tell it. It was just all one. I couldn't handle it anymore. But that child didn't know what it wanted for breakfast. And it was given all these choices. So they get this choices here, and they're making their own choices. Remember, they have a will of steel. This sweet little innocent child wants what it wants. And it has its own way, and then it gets over here as a teenager and starts doing evil stuff, running with the wrong crowd. And then all at once, you're trying to bring them into control. You've left them have their own way all their life, and now you're trying to bring them under your control. It doesn't work. You have this child from one, at least from 1 to 5, you are giving them instructions. You don't ask the child, "Do you like your diaper changed?" No, you just do what's good for them. And one of the things that, this is from Howard Hendricks too, and I'm not a fan of Howard Hendricks, but he did teach me some things. The advantage of a big family. When a big family, supper is at 6, you'll be there or else you won't get anything to eat. And if you just have one child, that's fine. But when you have one child in the home, what time would you like supper? 5, 6, 7. Sorry. Then see, what you do is teach that child to be selfish. Listen, when a big family suppers at 6, if you're not there, we don't do that either. We get them food if it doesn't work. But I'm just saying that's some of the concept. Give them what they need. This morning we're going to eat cereal. This is what you're eating. This morning we're going to eat eggs. This is what you're going to eat. And I'm going to talk about that a little later. But as they grow older, And here, by the time they're five, you should have command over your children. Well, that's a pretty strong statement. I'm talking in ideals. No, you're not going to be by five. But if by the time they're 10, you cannot say to your child, do this. And they say, they might complain, but they will do it. Okay, so I don't want to make it too idealistic. I was in a home, a little fella. He asked his mother, can I have this? And she said, yes. I mean, that child is trained, okay? And I'm not going to pick on you when I look at your children because I know enough about how it was. I can't get too far carried away on stories. I had two sons like the man in the Bible had. The one son said he would do it, and then he wouldn't do it. And the other son said, no, I won't do it, and then he'd go do it. So that I'm just telling you, our family was very normal as far as that. But I like to see when children will ask for things, and I like to see when dad says, and even a good father that has the children under control, when you're away from home and you say like, no, okay, it's good. I don't like to see children that are afraid and scared, but I'd like to see them just with respect. Okay, it's good. Everything's good, and it'll give you rest in your home. As they get older, you release them to their own decisions. You have patterned them. You have trained them that this is how it should be, and you can then release them. By the time they're 20, they're going. And then they will do their own thinking. You want them, the grandest thing is when they say, Dad did it this way, I want to do it this way. And that you have trained them in a proper way. And you have this time to convince them that what you're telling them is right and good and will be a blessing in their life. And if they can catch that fact that this is a blessing, they'll lay hold on it. Here's what I have seen that I saw this later, and some of this is different personalities of parents. I don't know how much I should say. Maybe I should let that, but I was probably more of the lenient type, okay? My wife came from a home, it was more the command type. And I have learned, here's what some people's line looks like this. Am I getting this right? No, I don't have that right. My chart is there. Some people's line looks like this. They release them to their own decisions at 10 and 11. And they're not yet ready for some of them. And when I draw this and I show you this, it's hard for me to define exactly what to release and what not to release. But when a child is under your roof, you're still the dad, and you still call the shots. And what I have seen was this kind of thing is better. To keep them under control and release them at 15, 16 to some of these decisions. When you're here and they want a strawberry cone versus a chocolate cone, that's fine. You release them to their own decisions on that. But there are some major decisions. No, you still, as a father, help them. What I have learned is that we're releasing children way too young. Okay. Command them. You have a vision as a father and mother for what you want your child to be like. Give them that. Give them that full tilt. And it's this idea again that if you suppress them, they won't blossom into a beautiful person. That is not true. That is a lie. Don't believe that philosophy. That is not true. Give them what they need. Okay, so I think that's enough on that, as far as that goes. Hopefully it came through a little bit on, it didn't give you any absolutes on that, and it would take a long time to be able to try to define all of that. But that's what I'm seeing. I shared that at a church. This young man, he was only 12 or 13, and he said, "Oh, it's a bunch of nonsense." And I felt like saying, "Yeah, I'd like to talk to your dad about you too. You need your wings clipped a little bit." I mean, that boy at 10 and 11 years old was off on his own too often. And so that's one of the things that I have learned over the years. Keep that under control. I wanted to talk a little bit about correction. And we had service, there were services there at Chippensburg, and Steve Ebersole shared some wonderful sermons on that. He actually made a little paddle that he hands out to people. I don't have any paddles for you, but just a little thin paddle, wasn't so big. And I don't know what all your philosophies are on paddling. I mean, I'm sure you believe in paddling, but you don't want this big, heavy board. That doesn't, you don't want that. And what I was taught that I didn't live up to was that if you use a rod instead of your hand, that they won't be afraid of you, they'll be afraid of the rod. I used my hand, okay? I like to know how hard it was coming through. And I was scared of a rod. So I'm not sure how to give you good counsel on that. Again, the bottom line is that they must listen. There was one lady who said that paddlings don't work. Paddlings do work. That's scriptural. That's right. And you need to do it. And again, a lot of these, I remember my friend had some people he was working with. They were so not used to paddling, and their child was acting up, and they said to my friend, "Should we paddle now?" "Yeah," he said, "you need to paddle now." When a child is disobedient, and you know that it knows, you need to give it correction. It's just that simple. They must obey you. Now, there's other forms of correction. Oh, my mom, she was a disciplinarian in a unique way. I don't remember any paddlings. And maybe that's what's wrong with me, but she would set us on chairs when we got too wild. And I should talk about that a little bit. Part of this has to do with control. You let them get wild, and they will be wild. In our home, I had two rules that I followed through very strongly. There was no throwing things in the house. I would ship them outside if they started throwing something. And there would be no hitting. Okay, this child hits the other child. And then they have all the reasons as to why they should hit back. "I don't want to hear any of your reasons. I don't care how it is. You're not going to hit." If that child hit, they both get correction. And if I deemed the picking on them was so badly, I would correct them both. And I'm giving you, I wish I'd give you some more absolutes, but that was out in our home. Picking, we did have them pick on each other. I gotta move on. We were just had the local family there at my son's place, and they got to talking about some of that. And they were laughing about it. And one lady had said, "If I ever have children, I'll never allow my children to pick on each other like my parents allowed to pick on each other." Well, our children picked on each other and tormented each other, but they were all laughing about it, so I guess they had all forgiven each other for the whole thing. And children are just that way, and I think I'm going to talk about that later. So let's move on. Correction is very important. You want, again, they feel loved and cared for, you can give them correction. Okay, I want to talk about, don't pity them for their crying. They need correction. And I learned this, I don't know if this was from Fugate or not. I feel like I'm rambling a little bit, so you'll have to bear with me here. I'm trying to give you practical information, and I feel like I'm not getting it through. But this is what I learned. A child must obey, and if he doesn't, he gets correction. Sometimes if you would tell a child, you put the books away there before you go to bed, and they say, well, let's say they don't want to, and almost you are getting lazy as a parent, and you know that there's two books out, it'd be just simple for you to stick it in as to correct. Well, just go to bed then. Okay, they won on that one. The other one, well, even if the child says, no, I don't want to, and you know it's a fight, and well, all right, go to bed. You have lost the battle right there. Your words don't mean anything. The other one that they shared was this, that if you tell a child, put the books away, and they start crying, and my belly hurts, and I don't feel good, all right, go to bed then. They won on that one too. Don't let them do that to you. Don't let their tears back off. They must obey. One of the things you need to be careful as a parent is that, I use this term, it's not a very good term for non-resistant people, but if you pull your gun, you're going to have to shoot it. If you decide that they must do it, then you must make them do it. If you're going to back down, don't tell them to do it in the first place, or you've lost the battle. And that some of this is coming to me as I share, but when you back down, if they argue with you and they say, no, but this is this and thus and so, and you back down and change your mind, next time they're going to have more arguments when they know that they can hit your soft spot. You must think before you say, no, I want you to do that. I do believe there is a time where you can say, hey, I did not think about that particular aspect of the whole thing, and it's okay, and you've changed your mind. But if they know that they can hit your soft spot through crying, belly aches, or whatever, don't. They must obey you. Another thing that I've seen, and probably my fault too, you give them a command and you don't carry it out. I saw one father tell his son, before we go, tie your shoes. He didn't want to tie his shoes because he was being lazy. And he looked at his dad, and they were going out the door, and he's still looking at his dad, and he still had not tied his shoe. You need to follow through on your commands to do. And I know that there were times when, see, I was back to that issue of my views. I'm trying to share with you my own failures. I'd tell the boys, go do the chores, and they were supposed to go do it, and I was busy. And it didn't always follow through to see that they got it done. And there was a lot of this going on during chores, so that was my failure there. And it can be very difficult to follow through with what's happening. I have seen parents say, pick up the toys. And when they left, the toys were still there and just did not follow through on the teaching. I had a neighbor that the boys knew that if dad was mad, they were in trouble. But if dad was happy, they could skip out of it and nothing would happen through all that thing. You want your children to know that your words are true words and that I mean what I say. They will learn, they will come to the conclusion probably that God doesn't really mean what he says either. If you as a dad let that all go. Swift correction. A child cannot comprehend. If you don't do this, next week you're not going to be able to go to grandma's house. They can't calculate that way, and they need correction right then. And I want to bring this one in. My wife Vivian had her, our son was there at a place. She was working, and he was just grumpy and grouching. And this is words that we had heard from a sermon, and acting like a pain. And Vivian said to the other lady, "This boy needs delivered from himself." And she took him and paddled him. And she said she was a bit shocked herself how happy the boy got. So sometimes you must deliver them from the self. When they, and sitting in church, and that's an important part, a place to start your discipline. And when a child, we have seen parents bring, here I am saying this stuff, if you have a whole bushel basket of toys, that's all right. But when a child is dissatisfied, you can give them one toy, and don't want that one, give them another toy, don't want that one, give them another toy. There's not enough toys to make an unhappy child happy. Okay? And there was one man, he had one toy that he carried in his coat pocket, and that was your toy, be happy or not. And there's times in church when a child is just not happy, it's just not content, they just need delivered, okay? And I sort of had a rule, I'm not going out, and if we do go out, I learned this from my father-in-law, when we do go out, there's going to be correction, okay? We're going to put up with this as long as we can. Vivian's dad had a garage right below their house, and she said, when Dad came up from the garage, we knew it was too late then. When Mom went down and said, "Dad, this child needs correction," there was no turning back. She said, we knew it was too late. And this is back to when I had small children in church. As I got older, it was better, and I tried to figure that one out. Maybe I was nervous, and maybe I was worried and made the child nervous, I don't know. But as I matured, it went better. And maybe I learned how to command my children that they respect me and what I say and did. And so, yeah, some of these are very practical things where you learn. And if you have family devotions, it's a good place to begin to teach them to sit. I see your children sit very nicely, but there are some children that would never sit through a two-hour church service. That would just not happen. And I'll try to move on here and get done. I think of stories to tell, and I got to quit it. All right. And this one I'm going to go through quickly. This is what I learned from my wife, and this is not in my category at all about, maybe I should skip over this whole thing, but okay, potty training, nursing, and my wife, I shouldn't even enter into this because I'll get in trouble with this, but a child likes a regular schedule. They like to know what's going on, and she would nurse at 4 hours, okay? And I am digging a hole for myself, but if that's not your practice, that's fine. Potty training, this was her comment. Children are not trained at times because moms are not trained. When you want to train a child, you have to be trained yourself to take the child at intervals. And so we'll pass that one on. I'll be in trouble here. But there is something about being a scheduled person yourself to make your child schedule. And again, a child that is trained and is commanded will feel very secure. Think of your child that has to go to a sleep out and they still aren't potty trained at 7 years old. You have to pity the child. When I think of a child that doesn't obey his parents, it's the parent's problem. You need to command, you need to instruct them. One of the first disciplines they'll learn is at the table. And again, ask your child, do you want potatoes, potato chips, or do you want pretzels here for lunch? Or maybe a bowl of candy. You give them what they need. And you give them what we have made to eat here at the table. And it was some of the first battles we ever had. I mean, they would put three peas in their mouth and not swallow them. This is just life. They must learn to eat this. Tastes are acquired. Tastes are something that you can learn to like. And we did not try to force them to eat foods that were exotic foods or expensive foods. Our children hated mushrooms, but we loved mushrooms, and so if they didn't want to eat mushrooms, we'd eat the mushrooms. A few things like that, and tomatoes. My wife never liked tomatoes, so we were sympathetic towards them of liking tomatoes. If you as a parent don't like something, it's a little hard to force your child to not like them. So even as adults, maybe you should learn to eat whatever's set before you too, you know. So I'm sorry, I'm going off on a bunny trail, but I pride myself in being able to eat anything until I went to the prison in Atmore, Alabama, and whoo, that one I couldn't handle. I, to this day, don't know what it was, but it tasted like silage. So, you want your children to learn to eat healthy foods. You want to, let's move on from that. But you're developing habits that are with them for many years to come. And they need to learn to eat good foods. Proverbs, there's verses, put a knife to your throat if you're given to an appetite. Don't eat too much honey. He that loves pleasure will be poor, wine and oil. I'm going to skip over a lot of that, but work habits. Teach them how to work. Some of our culture is losing out on that. I have a daughter and son-in-law that now live in Baltimore City, and we're worried about their work habits. Vivian grew up, her dad was a mechanic in the garage, so what do you do with these younger ones? They don't have farm chores to do. I'm thankful for the farm that we lived on, and I'm not saying everybody has to be a farmer, but it gives an opportunity for children to do chores. And you, at Vivian's home, mom made them clean the kitchen, clean the bathroom. They did cleaning, and like she said, they made wonderful husbands. I didn't grow up like that, and she sort of, I didn't know how to clean the house and do stuff like that. And so, make work for them. When I go by the road and I see some of these different cultures, and I went by, she thinks she was an old order Mennonite, and she had a wheelbar she was a young girl, maybe 12 years old, and that wheelbar was piled high, and I thought, now that's a culture. That's establishing something in her that a lot of people lack. And in our world, we don't have that kind of work ethic. It's a privilege to work. When you have worked hard, physical work, and again, if you're a computer whiz and you do computer work, that's fine. But they need to learn to do work. It's satisfying to be able to work. There was a man that was training as a Navy SEAL. And they are given jobs that are rigorous. They're in battle. I don't even know what all they do. I just heard this story. But he was there in training. Every morning, he had to make his bed. And they would inspect that bed. I mean, there would be no wrinkles in the bed. His cover thing had to be folded neatly and put at the bottom. And he thought, this is the dumbest thing. I'm here training to be a Navy SEAL, and they're fussing about how I make my bed. After a long time, all at once he saw the importance of making his bed. And he gave a speech on this thing of how important it is to make your bed. And then he wrote a book. And I didn't get to read the book, but I'd like to read his book, Make Your Bed. It's the first thing you do in the morning. And how long? I was going to time myself. I never made my bed until like 11 years ago when I started fixing appliances. And my wife can't sleep, so she gets up before me, whatever. And I make the bed. But when it only takes 1 or 2 minutes to make the bed. And make it like an art. You're going to do this thing. You're going to make it neat so the lines line up. And 2 minutes, and you can start your day with a sense of orderliness and a sense of having put together right. And that's what his comment was. And the man that was sharing this, he was a perfectionist that I knew. And then I wasn't sure. But he said, I just love it. Well, wait a minute. So I'm going to talk just 2 minutes here on perfectionism. Okay, so it takes 2 minutes to make your bed. I'm not for perfectionism. And if your child has perfectionistic views of things, get it out of them. Okay? And I'll try to balance this out. Takes maybe 1 to 2 minutes to make the bed, and you can do it neatly and you can do it right. But if that child is struggling after 10 minutes to get this bed perfect, that child has a problem. You need to help that child and work with it. Have you seen perfectionists that can't get anything done because all they can do is fuss and pick and thump? Get that out of their system. But teach them to work. We want them to be productive. We want them to learn how to work. I know that gardens, everything nowadays is calculated on if it pays. Do gardens pay? Hardly. If you would figure up your time, you can go to the grocery store and buy stuff so much cheaper. But gardens pay, okay? I promote gardens. And believe me, it was a struggle to get our children to pull weeds, too. We weren't. But listen, that's a place to learn to work. Even if you don't have a farm, you surely have a backyard, you could plow up a little bit and plant some peas and things, and you can teach your children to at least work in the garden. Create work for them. Another thing about that I found in my own self is that you look at a job, you don't quite know how to do it, and you dread the job. Somehow you need to teach them to be innovative, to tackle new things. And I got another whole page here. But that was my problem. When I look at a job and I don't dread a job, and teach your children not to dread it, but to tackle it, go for it, and be willing to get dirty. Don't always look for an easier way. My son still remembers that ditch I made him dig behind the house. We could have gotten a backhoe in here, a little mini excavator, and we could have. They still remember it, but hopefully they caught the lesson. You can dig too. And I think as parents, I don't know how this, again, from my family, my dad couldn't fix anything. Vivian's dad was a mechanic. He could fix everything. I sought to be like her dad, to be a fix-it man that could fix anything. And I aimed to learn all the skills I could, and I wanted my sons to learn all the skills they could. Teach your children many, many different skills. There are people, and Melvin was just sharing with me about the old-time workers that, shall we say, took pride in their job and did it well, and it seems like the younger generation can't. It's about the dollar, maybe. And some of the younger generation can't even get to work on time, can't even be punctual, and it seems to be not all young people are like that. But teach your children to be responsible to employers, responsible, be on time, be punctual. probably, we homeschooled. I guess you homeschool. I'm not sure some of you homeschool. Teach them to love to learn. And I don't know how to tell you how to love to learn. But if you as a parent love to learn books, and I'm going to talk about this tonight a little bit on some of this, but that was a difficult journey for us on homeschooling and teaching and all that. But yeah, I'll talk about that more tonight. Money. Money problems seem to run in families. You ever see that? And I don't know why it is. Dads that can't manage their money, their sons can't manage their money either. When I reflect back on what my dad taught me about managing money, I don't think he ever told me anything. And this goes back to last night's topic. But it came through his view on money. And myself and my brothers, we're all a bunch of tightwads, and it just came through. My dad never had much money, and we know how to screech that stuff, you know. What you want to teach your children is to be very, very thrifty, but very, very giving. Now, that's a hard combination to get to, okay? But that should be our goal. We don't selfishly spend our money on ourselves, but we freely give to people in need. Money is not that hard to figure out. You don't spend more than you make, okay? How hard is that? And in our story I heard years ago, and this is what we need to communicate to our children. Let's say, this is adjusted for inflation. I'm not sure where to adjust it for Maine, but wages are crazy. I can't believe the money people make. And my biggest concern, all the money people make and they don't have any. Zero. And especially young people that don't have any responsibility. I could tell you stories on that, but that's one of my big concerns. But supposing you make $40,000 a year and you spend $42,000 a year. Just horrible misery. Always up against it. If you make $40,000 a year and you spend $38,000 a year, perfect bliss and wonderful. And the difference is only $4,000. Don't spend more than you make. How hard is that? Now, I do understand a business has to at times borrow money to make their business go and to get it started. But we don't borrow money to go on vacation. We don't borrow money to buy the vehicle we don't need. What do they say? We borrow money. We borrow money to buy things we don't need, to impress people we don't like. Manage your money well and teach your children. And again, those kind of things will come through as you say, no, you're not buying that. I have seen too many youth that are clueless about what is necessary and what isn't for money. Okay, we could talk about a lot of things. You want to teach your children to be honest. We want to teach your children to be servants to others. We want to be able to share. We could go down many roads. But again, the thing that I was sharing last night, they will basically be just like you. And you need to be that good example. You do need also to teach them and to give them instruction. So hopefully there's a few suggestions for child training you might find helpful. Lord bless you. It's a very important work, and it's very serious, and it has long-term effects on your children that will be with them the rest of their life. Lord bless you.